It's Wednesday, the 11th February 2015, from Hong Kong. I'm just going to meet my oldest friend here, Thomas Wong, for breakfast. Always good to catch up with him and find out what's going on in the region. I've got a few consultations today and I'm giving a seminar on open access, which I'll record a bit of later. I'm doing that at the Polytechnic University and apparently something like 50 people are going to come. Well, I've just had a very interesting meeting with John Yuen here and Sarah Fung. John is an anatomy teacher in the faculty and he's based in the school, and I've been involved before in giving them some advice on the organisation of the teaching, and they've taken that advice and linking the anatomy teaching with the physiology. The students are finding it very difficult, and nursing students nearly always do. Anyway, today they've come to tell me about their new online course that they're doing, and also about their MOOC, that massive online open course, which they want me to play a part in, possibly as a visiting professor, but I'm going to do a video introduction about myself and anatomy and physiology and nursing tomorrow, and then I'm going to do something with the course as it progresses and sum up at the end, and I can do all this remotely, so I'm really looking forward to that. And once it's online as a MOOC, then we can use it at Hull, then anybody can use it in fact. And they're also going to ask me to review some material for the programme, and they're teaching this using the concept of the flipped classroom. This is one whereby the students do most of the work outside the classroom, and then the classroom session is used as revision and for answering questions and taking part in tests. I'm finding it quite challenging, as I can well imagine, because I think I alluded to in yesterday's podcast, students here don't particularly like participating in class. They don't like answering questions. However, they say that some do, and they've had to attenuate and compromise a little bit with the way the material's delivered to make sure that the students are actually learning something. So this is going to be evaluated, and a very interesting project, so I'm glad to be part of it. My breakfast this morning with Thomas Wong was interesting as usual, caught up on the region and events that are happening here. He's working very hard in mainland China and in Hong Kong, doing a variety of interesting things. I don't think there's anything specifically that I can become involved in yet, but I've always wanted to become involved with things that Thomas is doing, so I'll keep in touch with him. He's saying that China is graduating 1.8 million nurses every year, and they're aiming by around, say, 2020, when a quarter of their population is going to be over 65, to have something like 30 million nurses in the country. It's just mind-boggling in terms of the numbers. And also learning about some other interesting developments with the Chinese Nursing Association and the International Council of Nurses as well, which I shan't repeat in the podcast, but it's useful information to tuck away and to know and to be aware of.
Free of charge, essentially, to anybody who wants to look at it. That's what open access means. And they want it to be free and open access, anything that's funded by the taxpayer. And also the research councils, which are kind of quasi-autonomous non-governmental organisations, but since they're funded by the government and run by the Department of Business, Innovation and Skills, essentially do whatever the government says, they're doing exactly the same thing. They're expecting researchers, the research that they fund, to deposit their articles in conference proceedings and open access repositories at or around the time of publication. So people who obtain British government research funding are going to be obliged, well, in fact they're obliged now, to make things open access, and it's got a lot of consequences. One of the consequences is it's potentially going to bankrupt universities like the University of Hull, because it's going to cost a huge amount of money. So I see people copying things down. My email's always at the end of my slides. I can email you the slides if you want, because there's a lot of information on these. You're welcome to have them. There's no copyright. I have to say, I forgot to say on the first slide it said at the bottom, with thanks to Chris Orr, he's our information technologist at Hull. He dug out a lot of the information for me and actually made some of the diagrams, which is quite good. So why open access? Well, what is the driver? What's the purpose behind it? There is an open access organisation in the UK, so you can click on websites and check out why people want to have open access. The first idea is that they want to improve the visibility of research. They want people to get access to research. and to read it, and particularly people who might not otherwise have access to the research. In other words, the general public, who may not be in a university, may not have access to the sort of libraries that we have access to. People in developing countries, where they may not be able to afford to subscribe to the journals. Basically anybody who doesn't normally have access to it, that's who they want to have access to research. I have to say, I don't want to put too much of my own slant on the issue of open access. I have to say, I think 99% of the driver, this driver here, is just nonsense, because I've never had any difficulty getting hold of any paper that's published anywhere. And the public say, well, what do we get out of it? Well, we get access to research. So this is the sort of, these are the sort of drivers behind it. I can't really think of any other ones. I didn't put a fifth bullet point, which is suspicion about publishing companies making profits, but that's one of the drivers behind it too. So open access really means something that's digital, online, free of charge, free of price barriers, free of permission barriers. So you can, you don't have to pay to get it, and within certain limits, you can use it. It's not completely without barriers, and I'll tell you a little bit of that at the end. You can still protect your work with its online open access. It's not something to feel, but this is really what it means. Essentially, the bottom line is that people don't have to pay to get to it. Somebody has to pay to put it there, but nobody has to pay to get it. There are two common forms. You may already have, turn the clock back 5 years and nobody'd heard of these things, but you probably are aware of these things now. But I'll run through it just to be sure that people are clear what the different types of open access are. There's gold open access, usually whereby the publication is made freely available. It's actually the publication that's produced by the company as a PDF. It's online, it's in a hard copy perhaps, but it's available freely. That's gold open access. And of course, the journal will charge somebody a fee to do that. If you're the author, they're going to charge you for it, or they're going to charge your institution for it. The other route is green open access, which is pretty misunderstood, really. But essentially, this is using a depository or a repository. I'm never quite sure which it should be, so depositing in a repository. It's not a suppository, because that's something completely different. But it's going to go into an repository of some sort and be freely available. And that can be the final paper, or it can be something else. It can be the final accepted manuscript. The green open access is still kind of under development and being used in different ways. Gold open access is simple. You pay a fee up front and it goes online. Green open access is a little bit more complicated. But the UK funding bodies have allowed the Higher Education Funding Council, which assesses our university research, is allowing green open access. The UK research councils are still pushing for gold access, with a particular kind of gold access route, green access. The Research Council's UK gold policy is as follows. They're trying to stop this route for their funded research. They're not interested in having the blue route anymore. They want research to be published by the gold route, paid there, and put into a repository, and made available. It doesn't really have to be put into a repository, in actual fact, because it's open access anyway, but they still want repositories. And the green route access is allowing the blue route, but after 6 to 12 months, they want the paper put into a repository. 6 to 12 months, depending on which discipline you're in. So that's the sort of, I say RC UK model, those are the only real models you could have. It doesn't really matter. If this is introduced in Hong Kong, in the Far East, more widely, there'll be a model something like this. However, word of warning, my own publisher, or our own publisher, Wiley, and I think most of the publishers are getting in on the act, they see this as a bit of a threat. They, of course, love that route because it's all paid for up front. Paid for subscriptions, and that's the one they prefer. But this is the route that many publishers are taking. They're allowing papers to be made available after 12 to 24 months, not 6 to 12 months, and it depends on the subject group that you're in. For some reason, STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, are 12 months, and social sciences are 24 months. Nottingham Forest somewhere in between. I'm not sure where we fall. We'll have asked, and nobody seems to know. But beware that there is no way that some publishers are ever going to let the published article loose in a repository. What they are talking about, very reluctantly, I hasten to add, is having a final accepted manuscript there. So just warning people to be clear and check what the policy of the publisher is, or you may end up having chasing you for copyright fees or whatever. Because if you do that, then you'll end up paying anyway for it, possibly more than you might have paid if you've done it the other way. So those are the models, and this is the sort of flow chart that's being recommended. If research is publicly funded, yes, it's got, you know, no, doesn't matter, that's fine. You've got to look for an open access option. If it's available, you go down there, and the APC funds, you know, you've got to ask if the article processing charges are available from the research funder. If no, it's got to go on, according to them, onto a green open access repository. And if it is available, you can give it up gold access. If not, they want it to go up gold access after 12 to 24 months. Sorry, green open access after 12 to 24 months. Again, there's still some negotiation going on between the publishing industry and the research industry, as it were. Now, are APC funds available from the research funder is a good question. In the UK, they used to be, and they just publish in our journal for a very small fee or nothing or whatever. The ones that charge a small fee will most likely take your money and you'll never see the manuscript again. You know, in the meantime, they have signed some sort of copyright declaration, so they're very, very important. Right, and this is not all they're up to. You know, just be very careful. And I've been the subject of a LinkedIn link from a very attractive young lady, not this one, another one, but she's quite pretty too. You know, but you know, okay, hi Ali, I'd like to connect with you on LinkedIn, you know, a pretty female, picture of an identity fake. They're trying to get people, presumably men, to sign up and put stuff up on the journal. That's one example, but there are other examples. As I say, I've seen one. I'm linked into somebody who I'm absolutely sure is one of these as well. Just interesting to watch what they get up to. And they're always asking you to help them set up a journal. And of course, I say, well, let's discuss it. You know, I just keep them stringing along for a while. Then the other thing that they're up to, these are the same companies, is setting up conferences, which are not conferences. So you send them a great deal of money. It looks like it's kind of legitimate, and you send them a packet of money, and you book into a hotel and all the rest of it, and you get there, there's no conference on at all. You know, they're just taking the money again, you know, taking an expensive vacation and trying to get credit for it. But this is happening quite a bit as well. In actual fact, the venues are often in the States, you know, but if you dig down on the website or look at the email and find sorry to say that often there's two countries where the source of these come: Southeast Asian countries, particularly India, South Asian countries, and China. You know, and I'm not saying that should immediately make someone suspicious, but it is odd by somebody. And he does new open access journal launches. They're all ones that are predatory, and explains why they're predatory as well. So his blog page is really long. Never mind, folks, help is at hand. Rescue in the shape of decent nursing, decent open access journals. I'm just using my own journal as an example, okay? It's not an advert for this, but you're very welcome to publish it if you want. I mean, for a start, you know, look for the publisher. It's published by Wiley. Look at the editor. I mean, you trust him. I look like I'm going to be shot on the YouTube video there, but you know what I mean. It's a reputable publisher, and you know we've got author guidelines, you know, submission guidelines, all the rest of it. You do have to be careful because some people who've got websites and you very like the original website. They call it online library, WLEY or something like that. This is another trick that people play to get you to put papers in. I haven't seen any evidence of one connected with our journal, but that has happened. And of course, everything, oops, what's happening? So I just wanted to look at our picture again. What's, you know, you can have attributes. contribution, you know, but as long as your work is credited, you can non-commercial redistribution and commercial redistribution. I can't remember the commercial, the non-commercial, but there's also commercial redistribution. I think that one there. So you, you know, you can sign different kinds of Creative Commons licenses, but do be careful that you, if you can, try to understand which one you're actually going to sign. And at Wiley, we make it quite clear which ones we use. We usually use the CC BY licenses. That's one there. The license lets others distribute, remix, tweak, and build upon your work, even commercially, as long as they credit you for the original creation. This is the most accommodating. That's the really free license, the free open access license. But you also get a choice. You can actually do the CC BY BYNC. And that's this one here. The license lets other remix people build upon you, but non-commercially, although the new options also knows non-commercial. So you can prevent people from making money out of you this way if necessary, or if you don't care about it, you can go this way. But it still means that anybody can download and read your work. It just depends on what they do with it. But all of the licenses require people to attribute the work to you. So they've got to cite you. None of this, open access doesn't mean you won't get cited or you shouldn't get cited. It doesn't mean any change to the ethics of citing work and plagiarizing and all the rest of it. All that remains the same. It's still a copyright license for a large circle. So you can find, you know, all the reputable publishers, Wiley, Elsevier, Sage and such like, they all have open access options. They're usually called Elsevier Open, Wiley Open, Sage Open. Go there and check to see what they permit, how much they charge, what the processes are, what the options are for the different kinds of journals. So that said, I've kept that quarter to.
That was my session on open access. It was very well attended. Nearly 50 names on the list. I don't think there were 50 people there, but it went to time. Got some good questions at the end. Strange, however, there was nobody that I recognised as a member of staff from the school there. Perhaps one person from the school, but other than that, there were students and people from other departments there, but also nobody from the school to introduce me. There was somebody there doing the technical part and taking photographs, which probably will never appear in the newsletter. We get hundreds of photographs taken here, but they never really seem to do anything with them. So I thought it was strange. I just felt perhaps we are being taken for granted a little bit at the poly. But I might be wrong. Anyway, tonight Mark and I go downtown and we meet with Linda Sim of the Marco Polo Club. She's manager of the Marco Polo Club. That's the Air Miles business class privileges club of Cathay Pacific. We used to know her predecessor who put us in touch with Linda. It's very good. We get the latest news about Cathay Pacific. We can feed things back to her and find out what the best ways to get to places are. It's always interesting and useful. And we both like Cathay Pacific very much, so we're always glad to buy Linda dinner, or occasionally to let Linda buy dinner for us. Tonight we're going to an interesting place in Chungking Mansions. Chungking Mansions is a place off Nathan Road. That's the main road, or the main drag, you might like to call it, here in Hong Kong. And Chungking Mansions is so famous that a sociologist has written a book about it, because it's a very strange place, or a melting pot of different cultures. You see very few black people in Hong Kong, but they usually, if you do see them, they're usually near Chungking Mansions, so this seems to be where they go. It's a also a place where a great many of the South Asian Indian copy watch, copy handbag suits are, people hang out. And it's just a place that's slightly, possibly beyond the edge of legality. I think a great many immigrants to Hong Kong who haven't got the proper documentation end up there. And I think essentially if they stay there, they get left alone. It's been given a facelift recently. It's a place into which you walk and you're immediately surrounded by people pressing cards on you to go to various restaurants. But we've been taken there a couple of times to a very good restaurant. It's run by Indians, and it's a curry house. It's very small. It's just in a room in a house, and I think it's called the Waka Mess. So we'll see how that goes. We're taking Linda there. We usually take Linda to one of the high-rise, five-star type restaurants, but we're going to take her there tonight just for something different to do. And she hasn't been there before, so this ought to be good.